This is KPOO San Francisco 89.5. You've reached Healthful Living's radio show Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant.
And I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist and Healthful Living advocate.
And so we are here today to talk about mind and body and all a nice integration of a lot of the work we've done, because we're going to have a yoga instructor on today who's going to be telling us about the wonderful virtues of mind and body and having a very holistic approach to healthful living. And so we're looking to have forward to having her on in a moment.
Well, this is great because we've clearly, I think the growth of the yoga, and I hate to call it industry, but or movement, but really awareness in the minds of the American public, for one anyway, is a wonderful sort of evidence of the evolution of consciousness that we've been seeing and noticing over the last 10, 15 years. I mean, it's not just random that more people are tuning into this. I mean, yoga's been around for a long, long time. A lot longer than America's been here, and a lot longer than American public has been seeking means of, quote, exercise or getting their bodies in shape. Mm-hmm. So something's going on that more people are tuning into yoga and getting something from it beyond just a good workout.
Exactly. I think it really helps to illustrate one example of how really the consciousness of people really is changing, because we're seeing a lot more people engaging in these activities, whether it's yoga or meditation or other mind-body-centered activities. This is, I don't see this as the fad, you know, a fad aerobics workout,
right,
like a new workout to come along. Certainly some people do it that way, but the true roots of yoga and the true benefit that most people gain from it are the integration of this mind and body.
Exactly.
And so we're going to be really looking forward to speaking with her in just a few moments, but I know that you had some very fascinating, really exciting things that we learned last night, and I wanted you to go ahead and express that.
Okay, I wasn't exactly sure where you're leading me here, but
well, I thought I was going to lead you to the.
Well, we could talk about this because it's. Julie and I were at the U2 concert last night over in Oakland. I was very fortunate to have been there the last two nights, so I can barely hear anything. But if you know anything about U2 and Bono and his work around the world, he's been quite active in a number of very human causes over the past 20-some-odd years that he's been doing this. Number one, doing this, i.e. getting his work out there in the world and sharing what's in his heart and what he wants to share with humanity, but also really taking his ability to have a voice and to connect with people to forward some really noble, innately human causes. And presently, human rights is about as innate and human and straightforward as you can get. So for him to use the venue of the concert to further his 1.org campaign, which has, I think the one campaign has precisely to do with the elimination of debt for poor nations, so they can get a clean start and not have to go forward trying to build themselves up in debt to big countries like the U.S.
Right, which we know they can't possibly pay off, and that they are putting all of their extra money and resources towards paying this thing that they'll never pay, and that
right.
they've paid far over what they've ever borrowed. And it's, he was up for a Nobel Peace Prize this year, correct?
Yeah.
So it's very, very interesting. And so part of this one, so the website is one.org, correct? O-N-E.org.
Yes. Yeah. So last night during the show, they put up on the big screen and had someone speaking out, but the first 5 or 10 of the articles.
That are articles 4.
Of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
So this is a Declaration of Human Rights that has been created.
This is through the UN.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Article 1 right here. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in the spirit of brotherhood. If you read through this, and you can catch this, I got it at hrweb.org, You can read the Declaration of Human Rights. I think we've heard the topic so much. It's been on the news. It's been all around. And it's like, do people actually go there and read these things? Do you actually read them and let them kind of soak into your mind for a few moments and into your body, and you'll realize the innately human expression of how it is that we people, human beings living on this planet, really want to embody and choose to interact with one another, how we want to be in this world.
Yes, and what I think is really fascinating is that when you read through these articles, these declarations of human rights, it's not, it's common sense, right? We go, oh yes, of course, but then you read them and you realize, ooh, we're not even doing these. Like, right. Let me give you an example. Okay, so number two, everybody would probably agree, everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, and that goes on and on. Article three, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the security of person. Number four, no one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. Number five, one of my favorites, no one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment. And it goes on and on. So while they're simple and they seem to be, obvious, right, to most people, that everybody on the planet, if you read these to them, they would go, yes, of course. And yet, the people that are leading our countries are not abiding by even these basic principles. And if people really thought about it, they would realize that.
So I think the purpose of really connecting back in with this information is to sort of calibrate what we're talking about here with respect to human rights. And again, what we're talking about with respect to healthful living. In that it is not a dogma per se. We're not putting out a list of rules that we want to follow. Let's do these things, and unless we're doing those things, then we're wrong in some way. No, it's not what it's about. It's about sitting and declaring what is innately human, what is innately fair, what is healthful, and how can we shift our default way of being to one of being in pursuit of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just hanging out, not really having a choice, but being in effect of that which is around us and that which we're essentially, for lack of a better way to put it, told what to do or think or how to be in the world. And we're living in a phenomenal time of amazing awakening where more and more people are beginning to kind of get that and realize that a lot of the programs they've been running, a lot of things that they've been doing that haven't necessarily been serving them aren't really of their own choosing or creation, and beginning to act upon that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Act upon that choice. You were saying earlier, Julie, about integration of mind and body, which I feel is an inherently human evolutionary process. We aim to evolve. We grow. We learn. We integrate our knowledge as we go forward in time. And it's happening now at a phenomenal level. So I'm really excited to have Kieran on the show today so we can talk about the yoga phenomena and her role in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
she also has some very interesting, her mission is very fascinating and very appropriate, which is to end poverty and racism, which is very tied into what we're talking about today. So I think we're going to have a very holistic conversation, not only about the benefits of yoga, but how it ties into humanity and equality and all of those really important things that we've already been discussing this morning.
Okay, well, Kieran Mishra brings the ancient and timeless tradition of Saraswati masters to America. She was born into the lineage and tradition of the Saraswati River Yoga Masters in Bihar, India. Coming to the United States as a young girl, she brought this tradition with her. Her teachings reflect a lifetime of study and practice that is reflected in her dynamic and precise asana classes, revealing meditative inquiry and transformative tantric yoga practices for body, mind, and emotions. She's a spiritual director and founder of Saraswati River Yoga School in New Hope, Pennsylvania, where practice integrates the path of hatha, jhana, and bhakti. So I'd like to welcome Kieran to the show.
Okay, let's see if we can get her on the line. Kieran, are you there?
I am here.
Great. By the way, I know that we talked, but I also have Martin Matthews, my partner, on the line with us, so he's going to join us in this conversation.
Great. Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I have to say that I saw your piece on, I think it was NBC Today, and it was a really, really beautiful piece that was done.
Yeah, they did a wonderful job really capturing the honor and respect in the ancient feeling and the modern application of yoga.
Yeah, I was very impressed that in a, what, 3 minute or 5 minute TV news blurb, they were able to create that atmosphere in such a short period of time and really give some great experience from some of your clientele and how it's so impacted their lives.
Yeah, well, yoga has just been transformative for everyone that encounters it.
Absolutely.
So what has been some of the common experiences of, let's say, non-traditional folks? There was a gentleman on the news cut that I saw who, you know, is a very high-paced, you know, fast-moving kind of working guy who discovered yoga. What are some people like that finding when they finally get into a class?
Well, you know, what we're finding is that people who think that or who used to think that yoga doesn't fit their life, with the misunderstanding that somehow yoga withdraws us from the world, which is not the aim of yoga. The aim of yoga is active participation in the world with creativity, vitality, with the upliftment of our bodies and mind and everybody's body and mind if possible. But what they're finding is that the attributes that we so value in modern times, you know, a brilliant mind, sharp intellect, a ready presence, that actually does not come from our lifestyle. It doesn't come from stress. It doesn't come from a narrowing down of the mind. It comes actually from an expansion, and it comes from the practices of yoga. And so it is not at all incompatible with what we want in modern times, but highly synthesized.
Wow. You know, I'd love to step back for a second and talk a little bit about that connection of mind and body. You know, we hear about it a lot, but can you give people some understanding of what's a practical application of that? What does that look like? How does that benefit individuals?
Well, the yoga practices, you know, it was designed by these, what we now call yogic masters or adepts. They were a group of sages. They were people who were seeking transformation from the mundane, who somehow got the idea that what we see is not all that is there, that what are the boundaries of our body and mind are really sort of more the borderlands of possibility. And in seeking more and seeking the borderlands of consciousness, what they discovered was that the body and mind is a continuum, and we have a too narrow definition and therefore experience of body and mind. And they experienced what we call awakening. I myself shy away from the word enlightenment because it's become one of those cliche where we all say it, we don't even really know what it means, but it is a great word if we really understand it. But they experienced directly an awakening, which is, you know, an unconflicted, uninterrupted presence of seeing things as they are, because we don't usually do that. We see things as we are. And if we are stressed, and if we are unhappy, if we are reactive, if we are in the habitual grooves of our minds and of our, you know, very narrow world, then that's the way we perceive the world. Well, they had an uninterrupted, very vital presence, and when they saw things the way they were, they realized there really is a physiology of body and mind, and the practices are designed to give us that palpably, nothing abstract. In working with the yoga asanas, the physical postures, we find that we awaken the nervous system, the endocrine system. We work with the body, finding its capacity. Scientists say that we use 8% of our brain. Yogis are not so hopeful. They say we use one-half of 1%.
Wow.
They were interested in using 100%. So just think about that from a physiological point of view of having a different nervous system. But the yoga practice, I call it, it's sort of a physiology of kindness, compassion. The body structure changes when you have a heightened awareness. So on a practical level, through meditation, through working with mantras, the sacred sounds, through inquiry, looking into the way the mind works, the way the emotions work, what we find is that we recover our vitality and that brilliance and all the things that we want. Because, you know, as Americans particularly, we want a lot. And we find that through the yoga practice, we can have that.
Hmm. You know, I like what you mentioned about enlightenment versus awakening, because while I do like the word enlightenment, I find that it can be very goal-oriented, whereas awakening is sort of the beginning of a lifelong process, which is much more accurate. You know, we all want enlightenment, and so we think that we can get it after 2 years, or that it's something that you achieve and then you're done at that point. So I do like that term awakening, as much more, I guess, accurate way to describe it.
Well, it's a good distinction, too, between that sort of goal-oriented, and which is just, you know, another object we're after.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the pitfalls we can get into, and when we get deeper into yoga practice, is that we impose the outer paradigms into our yoga practice, so we haven't really left anything behind, right, if we're making our yoga practice now goal-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And awakening to things about which we have been previously asleep, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and we can be asleep to so much. You know, in our own bodies, we don't realize how much we can heal ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, obviously one seeks help in healing, too, with all the wonderful practitioners, but the body can do so much, and we're asleep to the possibility of our minds. And I think the other place in yoga too often is that we don't often realize the use of emotions, too, that we don't have to be in servitude to them. In yoga practice, we find that the emotions can communicate and give us so much information.
Mm. How do people typically find a class? I know that there's many ways that somebody can end up in a yoga class for the first time, right? Somebody brings them, a friend tells them, maybe they're starting off with some, maybe they have some pain and they want to change it, or maybe they want to get their body in shape, or maybe they're just curious. What are you finding just to be the sort of the range of people that are discovering yoga now?
Well, these days, because yoga is so popular, a lot of people are coming because they've heard how wonderful yoga is, which is great. And, of course, whatever reason brings us is perfect. A lot of people do absolutely come because, you know, the backs and the shoulders and the knees hurt. And a lot of people come because of the amount of stress that they experience.
You were talking about some of those benefits about the nervous system and the immune system. Can you give some, while we're on the topic, just some more examples of how this reconnection or awakening can actually, what are some of those physical benefits people have seen in practice of yoga regarding the physical body?
Well, absolutely. You know, this is a very long list because it's been very exciting to see that yoga, in terms of the physiology of the body, positively affects so much. People who were headache sufferers find relief. People who have arthritis can find relief. People who have joint tension, aches, pains, the general health of the body is increased, and therefore it also boosts the immune system. There's usually a general feeling of well-being and vitality, but just about any of the usual aches and pains, and then in addition to that, some of the other conditions that we have grown accustomed to, scoliosis, diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiac incidences, things like that can be very positively affected with yoga practice.
I can see that a lot of people that are listening that have had no experience with yoga could say, okay, I could see how it could help with scoliosis or maybe my knees or something that's out of alignment. But maybe you can explain how could it benefit something like diabetes or a nervous system condition? Is it stretching? Is it creating blood flow to a new area? Do we know any of the science behind how it helps other parts of us?
We do know the science behind that, because that's one of the exciting times, the modern times, with medicine meeting yoga, corroborating the claims of the yogis. And some of the things you listed, kind of all of the above, because of the effect on the nervous system, because it is actually correct to say you kind of stretch through the nerve pathways,
mm-hmm.
Because of the effect that it has on the nervous system, itself through the deep breathing. For example, like in headstand, it can positively affect someone. Now, obviously, this is not something a beginner would do, and you would do it under the guidance of a qualified teacher, but someone who has, not someone who's had a heart attack, but someone who has some cardiac conditions and wants to do something preventively. Someone who's had a heart attack can practice yoga, but it wouldn't be quite what I'm describing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But so let's say you have some reason to be concerned about the health of your heart. For example, headstand. One of the things that it's going to do is that it's going to work with the blood flow differently mm-hmm. because of the way that the blood flows in the heart all the time. Turning that upside down, changing the way the valves receive the blood, the effect that it has, again, on the endocrine system, the lymphatic system, there are actual reports on how it can affect these conditions.
Wow, that's really amazing.
And then following on from that, can you speak a little bit about the importance of breathing and how breath is so tied into poses and impacting the body?
Yeah, this is really kind of the foundation of the yoga practice, looking at the breath. The breath, as you know, is an involuntary action, meaning we don't have to think about it. We haven't been thinking about it probably as we've been speaking, and of course we are still breathing. But we could also think about it, and its power comes from its variability. The fact that we can take conscious control over an involuntary system of the body gives us the power of that involuntary system, which is deeply, you know, ingrained in the body for life, for health, and we can take that power and we can work with it. When we shape the breath, we can do many, many things. We can soothe the nervous system. We can tone the diaphragm muscles, which are really our most important muscles. The way I think of it is that when we were in the womb, the umbilical cord did not go to our heart and our brains, which, you know, if you look at the body, you would think that's exactly where the umbilical cord would go, but it actually went down here in the core of our body. This is a very important area that really regulates our life. And so the breathing tones those muscles, and when you tone a muscle, you make it more intelligent, more efficient, and stronger. It increases our vitality. Certainly breathing also increases oxygen intake. But the yogis were not solely interested in that. They were interested in something very subtle, very powerful called prana, which is life force. And if someone's listening to this and thinking, well, that sounds a little out there, you know, it's like the wind. You don't see it, but you know its effect. And clearly there is a life force, because when we're alive, something is here that's not here when we're dead. And in actually moving the life force, and the breath carries it, to specific areas of the body and the mind, the yogis found that they could actually initiate very profound levels of healing.
Can you tell us a little bit about your school? You have the Saraswati Yoga Center, and is this a particular type of yoga? Is it a branch? And what does the word mean?
Oh, sure. Saraswati River was an ancient river about 7,000-8,000 years ago, and it was, legend says that there were a group of women yoga masters who were along this area that were the great teachers. And Saraswati means wisdom, it means the flow of creativity. And so in honor to my teachers and in my family, we go back thousands of years as yoga teachers. It's a lineage that's been carried on. So in respect to them, I named the center Saraswati River Yoga, and also to keep that feeling of the flow of river, that this flow continues with all of us and that we can enter its stream. And our yoga center has been, we're out here on the East Coast, but we have teachers all over, and we do attract students from all over. And I go as well throughout the country and to India as well to teach. Our particular point of view is, of course, we're Hatha Yoga, like all the other wonderful yoga centers out there. We're very interested in taking sort of the ancient practices and bringing them to now and having a synthesis so that when we feel the transformation of yoga, which is inevitable, you will. Everyone reports that. They feel something profoundly changes. But using that which is waking us up to maybe, you know, contribute back into the world, because you find freedom in yoga, and then we wonder, is that freedom good enough if all beings aren't free? So we have a big mission to try and talk about yoga, not proselytize, but talk, answer questions. We want you to take yoga wherever you want to take it. And maybe even start to think, as I am recovering my health and my peace of mind and my creativity, how can that affect all beings?
Mm-hmm.
You were born in India, is that right?
Yes.
And I would love for you to speak a little bit about some of this ancient tradition and about your philosophy of life and health growing up as a child.
I was born in India, and I was raised here, though.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides of my family are keepers of different streams of yogic knowledge, particularly the philosophical schools. So I feel very fortunate because I grew up reading these ancient texts. I was taught them at a very young age, and the tradition in India is that you learn the texts, you memorize them, and then you reflect on what do they mean. Then you apply them and practice them. So I grew up doing that every Sunday of every week of my life, and then I got very interested in meditation and philosophy, and so I really pursued that from the age of 12. I actually was not so involved in the physical aspect until I became pregnant with my second daughter. I had not practiced any of the physical postures, the asana. My family was very immersed in the other streams, and I myself was a very non-physical child. I was the type that, you know, always got chose last on gym, you know, sports teams and stuff. I didn't do anything athletic, and I wasn't feeling well during my pregnancy, and it was like a little light bulb went off going, oh yeah, those asanas. And I started practicing them, and my physical health vastly improved, and I found my meditation practice transformed, and I found I could also integrate the energies that awaken if I did the asana practice. It gave me more of an experience of wanting to stay in the world and being interested in what is happening here. And so I have become a very big advocate of doing the physical practice with a context of the other, because it keeps us engaged in the world.
So when most people think of yoga, they think of the physical postures that you're speaking of, but you just mentioned other streams of yoga. And for people that aren't aware, what are those other streams?
Well, they are actually larger and more popular in India. Like you said, we associate yoga with the movements, but, you know, yoga means, I think all of us know, it means union. It doesn't mean union of body and mind, because the yogis did not see body and mind separated. It means union of the individual consciousness to the universal consciousness. And so there are many, many other practices or methodologies. Meditation, probably being one of the other primary ones we're familiar with. Pranayama, which was the breathing. There's what's called inquiry. It's a looking into the patterns of our minds and our emotions. You know, what are the ways that we always think? It's about asking good questions to start to get a different and larger perspective. And then, of course, there are the mantras, which is a sacred sound. And then there are visualization practices. There are many practices that integrate all of that. So those are a little taste of the other practices.
Thank you for that. I wanted to just take this time to let everybody out there that's listening that just joined us that you're listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5, and you're listening to Reality Sandwich with Julie and Martin Matthews, and we are with HealthfulLivingSF.com, and this is probably a good time to have our guest state her website. So we are on the line right now with Kiran Mishra, and your website is?
It's Saraswati riveryoga.com, and I should probably spell that Saraswati riveryoga.com.
Great. So people can find all sorts of other good information on that website about yoga and what you do.
Kiran, I wanted to read something really beautiful from your bio and then continue on with that discussion briefly. It says here, you're in reference to the ancient practices, it says, it is a tradition that is intrinsically in harmony with nature and seeks to fulfill the beauty of the ascent of humanity to divinity. The texts, stories, and mantras are ripe with the poetic vision of ones in accord with nature and knowing the proper relationships of the universe. When I read that, I just feel like, wow, that is just so beautiful and deep and just like, tell me
that's
a little bit
feel
more.
Feel good even to hear that. I mean, that's, you know, that's the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, we're called Homo sapiens, which means wise man. I hope we live up to that. I think we can. I think in our heart of hearts, we all know something bigger, more beautiful is happening. Even when we have big, beautiful, wonderful thoughts, that there really is an interrelatedness of things, and there is a harmony and a power, and we can be in accord with it. And I think one of the reasons that sometimes we feel so awful is because we know that that's not happening. And there really is a place in all of us that seeks that, that longs for it.
I think that's undeniably human.
Yes.
It's been suppressed. It's been suppressed quite a bit by a lot of the other things that are going on in our environment and the world and those that are in power doing their thing. But undoubtedly, there's more and more people that, you know, are awakening and connecting in and sensing and feeling this.
Well, you're absolutely right. And those of us who are sensing and feeling this, we have to speak up. That's what I want to see the power of yoga doing, is give us the power and the strength. It's never going to be easy. It's always going to be risky. But give us the power and the inner fortitude to speak up, because that's what we need to do. And I have to say that I was at the U2 concert in Philadelphia.
All right.
Mm. And I love U2. I love Bono. I love that he uses his amazing power to speak up about human rights. It's the right use of power. And I think that's what we're talking about, you know, in that piece that you read. It's about the right use of power, and I think we have to speak up and do that.
Mm-hmm.
What is our proper relationship with the universe?
our proper relationship with the universe, at least according to the yogis and my little experience, is that we serve something great. There's a really interesting text, very old, obscure text in yoga that talks about why it's so significant that we, as human beings, we stand upright. We don't usually think about that. We stand upright. But if we think about it, we're actually the only species that can do that. Even, you know, chimpanzees and other monkeys, supposedly our closest relations, can't do that. And we're the only ones who can lie flat and then sit up straight. And the text says it's because we are physiologically attuned to be... Now, this is my paraphrase of the text. We are physiologically attuned to be the conduit between above and below. It says to me that we should be stewards of all that is here. Not, you know, think on top of the food chain, hey, I've got all the power, I can do what I want. But we're the ones with the power, so comes the responsibility to be in stewardship of everything that is around us. I think nature has a harmony, and I think we knew that and can know that if we would listen more, feel more, and not think just beyond, or not just see beyond our whiskers, so to speak.
We were just talking about the Bono and the human rights and all of that, and one of the things that I had heard was that one of your missions is to end poverty and racism. So this might be a good time. I'd love to find out more about what that means to you and what your passion is and what you're doing around that.
Well, soon I'm going to have another website up for an organization that I founded called the Center for Empowerment of Justice, and it's teaching yoga and yoga methodologies to people who do peace and conflict resolution work, the people who are in the front lines. Mm. And they really need the methodology and power in order to help with burnout, in order to help heal trauma, because yoga can do this too. Mm-hmm. And these are the people who are out there trying to make these changes. So teaching, bringing these practices to the social workers, to the ones who are out there. My mission is, like I was saying, I know yoga can wake us up. To what degree is to each of us, right? Mm-hmm. But I know it wakes us up on the level of body, mind, emotions, consciousness. And I'm interested in finding out that as we wake up, can we take that awakening so that it affects everyone? Because we do feel we're interrelated. You get to a point where you go, I'm free. But is it good enough when everyone's not free? And there is no reason, in my opinion, in this day and age for there to be any poverty. There really isn't. There mm-hmm. is enough food.
Mm-hmm.
And the other heartbreaking thing for me personally is to see the amount of racism that is actually still here. So I've been wondering that as yoga practitioners and teachers, could we do something about meeting that, having dialogues, talking about that, challenging our points of view, maybe creating a world that could create awakening for everyone, because one thing is for sure, that a lot of us have access to these things because of the privileges that we have, which is great. Let's use that, but let's create it for other people too.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. I love in there this notion of regaining our choice. You know, we have the ability to pursue growth or to hang out and just take what comes to us. And more people are tuning into the mind in their own body. And I love what you said about how through their yoga practices, it's initiating, you know, introspection and asking questions of themselves and doing their own internal growth work, and just, you know, wherever it goes is going to be a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. And the oneness of everybody, so that we can, like you said, if we're not suffering, but everybody around us is, then is that good enough? And do we need to keep striving to have everybody reach those level of innate human rights and needs?
Well, that was so beautifully said by both of you, because what we don't want to see, and sometimes you see, is that you go, I get it. I get what's going on in meditation. I wake up. I'm done. Doesn't matter now for the rest of us. You mm-hmm. can do this too. We have to contribute to that, because I don't really think that any of us can be fully awakened until we're all awakened.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the great things that you hear about that I've heard recently in meditation, is that people, because we have such a fast-paced life, to say engage in something like meditation, a lot of times people will end up going away to an ashram or to somewhere on a mountain and do their thing, but it's not bringing it back to the people. And while that might be something they need to do for themselves, it's not, in my opinion, the end of the story. It's sort of the beginning, so that we can then teach it to other people and all of those wonderful things that you just said.
yeah, and live it, because if people see you living in the world mm-hmm. with that, then they know it's possible for them too. That if we always just see the masters leaving, mm-hmm. then what does that say about this world?
Exactly.
Yeah. Kieran, have you heard something about this study that was done? I think it was actually in Washington, D.C., where there was a collective meditation that
yes.
took place?
Yes, about the bringing down the crime rate?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Could you imagine at some point, I mean, when we begin to take the knowledge of the impact of that, right? We're now getting, you know, actual verifiable feedback of the impact of collective thought or collective meditation.
Right, right. The power of our minds when we focus it on something bigger than the usual. I want, I need, I don't have. We so often are focusing on that, not realizing the power we have to initiate such great change. I'm so glad we have these studies now, so that we can see, look what we could do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Certainly, Dr. Emoto's work with Messages from the Water has been a phenomenal scientific validation of the impact of our thoughts on an actual tangible, measurable substance as water. And these are subjects that are very easy for people to, you know, dismiss as woo-woo. Like, oh, yeah, tell me that my mind directs, you know, and affects what happens to me. But once you start talking about it for 30 seconds or more, everyone has an example of some circumstance where their mind was at in a particular moment definitely seemed to affect what was happening, you know, very much in their reality.
That's a good point. When you talk to people, even if at first they disagree, it's a really great point. Then they start corroborating it themselves, going, well, actually, I have had that experience.
I actually was speaking with a relative last week. Julie and I were ranting last week about our crazy visit to Los Angeles, sort of a visit inside the Matrix. But there I was speaking with somebody who was telling me that all that stuff is just, you know, hullabaloo. And they were saying, oh, that's not true. Oh, everything's random. And I said, oh, really? Have you ever had a time where you were just thinking about somebody and all of a sudden the phone rang and it was them? Yeah. You know, and then something else. Like, you ever have a time where you were, you know, late for getting somewhere and you were just so angry and you knew every light was going to be red? And sure enough, it was. or other times when you're like, oh, you know, we'll get there. It's going to be peaceful. And all of a sudden, every light turned green and you made it. And then they begin to think. And they go, maybe there is something to this. So begin to take from that to larger scale type things like we saw in that circumstance in Washington, and then imagine the possible impact of a day where all of the emerging yoga doing people in America all decide to spend, you know, 4 hours doing yoga or in a practice, and let's see what that does for the collective consciousness of our society, and let's focus on it.
Let's choose a day and let's run an experiment. Let's do it and dedicate it to everyone who's suffering right now.
Mm.
I mean, let's do it and see, because I too think that it's going to ripple out. And just turning the usual energy around, you know, instead of spending 4 hours, and you could be in a yoga practice, by the way, and being self-obsessed, so it's not even a matter of what you're doing, but it's how you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But take 4 hours, and in a yoga practice gives a better vehicle, but just say, okay, I'm not going to think about what's in it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to think instead, how can I serve? I think that this would be a tremendous experiment. Should we do it?
Yeah.
Let's pick a date.
Yeah, let's choose a date. Let's do it.
Okay.
National Yoga Day. Yoga Meditation Day.
Yeah.
We're actually getting verifiable evidence of the impact of human vibration on one another.
Yeah.
And that when one person changes their vibration, or we can talk more colloquially, however that word is, changes their state, right? Changes their emotional state even.
Right.
It affects those around them. And not just somebody right next to them, but really the thousands of people around you. And you can experiment with this and just try it sometime when you're near somebody else who is, quote, freaking out or having a difficult time. Take yourself to a deeply grounded state and put your intention upon that person and just wish for them or intend upon them to feel some of that grounding in that moment. You will see a change. You do have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. It's so beautiful. And it reminds me of the Sanskrit word. The two Sanskrit words that we have put into one English word, atmosphere, actually comes from the Sanskrit roots, atman, which means probably the closest thing is soul, and sphura, which means to vibrate with brilliance, with effervescence, to shine.
Mm.
And so our atmosphere is the shining or the emanation of our soul state, which is exactly what you're saying. We can change the atmosphere by sort of vibrating or shining the state of our soul, and it does create our atmosphere. Like when you go into the quiet of a library, it's different than the quiet of a church or a temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the noise of a baseball field or a YouTube concert is different than the noise
absolutely
of a station. It's what is being thought when you're there that creates the atmosphere.
Exactly, and people's energy shows up. If anybody doesn't believe that, you must have been to a party at some point where somebody walked in the room and something made you turn your head to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody just either stunning or something walked in with an amazing presence and an energy that affected the room and changes the vibration and changes the way people feel. And the more that we all can begin to understand that and be curious about it, the more that we can begin to be at choice about how we are in any particular moment and how we're affecting not only ourselves, but certainly those around us.
That's the one choice we have, because we cannot control the circumstances of what happens to us, but how we respond to it and what we do with it, that we have the power of choice. And you're really saying what the yogis have always said, is that we do have the power to uplift ourselves and others. We do.
Mm-hmm. So I want to just add a couple questions to kind of wrap it up here and then have time to give your contact information. So to bring all of this wonderful energy to the rest of the planet and those people that haven't done yoga before, can anybody do yoga?
Yeah, absolutely, you can. And if you're thinking, well, I have MS or I have a broken hip or I have this or that, you can practice yoga, but you will need to practice with a very qualified and specific teacher if you have any physical considerations. The Iyengar system is particularly good with this. Not the only system, but they are particularly good. Ask a lot of questions. Ask about your teacher's training. And if you have special considerations, mention that and ask, is the facility, the center, the teacher, qualified to work with me, and ask about the pace of the class, because if you want something fast and strong and vigorous, or if you want something slow moving, and just make sure you're in a class that's good for where you are, because you can start exactly where you are. Don't compare, don't compete, don't think, I haven't moved in 20 years, I can't do it. You can do it.
Wait, the voice of the naysayer comes in. Now, can you do this if you haven't exercised in 10 years?
You certainly can, because I have to tell you, when I started, I know I was only 26 at the time, mm-hmm. when I was pregnant with my second daughter and I started asthma, but I had not ever exercised. I did nothing. I was not a physical person. It's such an understatement. Mm-hmm. And I had not exercised. I was not flexible, which none of my students believe at all anymore. I was not flexible. Forget about touching my toes. I could barely bend over. Actually, medical science has corroborated that in yoga, the way we stretch muscles actually allows people who are very stiff and rigid to move better and faster than other forms of exercise. If you have not exercised in 10 or 20 years, make sure you're in a beginner's class with a good pace for you, but you can do it.
How about the guy with a bit of a belly whose girlfriend or wife has been doing yoga, really having a great time, and wants to drag him to it? How is he going to do?
I hope she doesn't drag him to her level class, because we do see that, and that's just not a nice thing to do.
Mm.
Don't drag him into an advanced, fast-paced class. If you want him to see what you can do, he can observe that class, because it is pretty amazing what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But take him to an appropriate, or her, whoever it is, to an appropriate level class and start where you are. Don't be overwhelmed, because then I think there's a tendency to say, forget it. You know, yoga, it's about putting your legs in lotus. Who can do that? So instead of that attitude, start slowly. And if you're in the right class and if you like the feeling that you get from your teacher, and you should kind of, you know, shop around a little bit until you feel comfortable, you can do it. It doesn't matter how long it's been since you've exercised.
And how about the fast-paced businessman or woman who is just running around with so many things in the air, and they're lucky to get in a 30-minute workout at lunch?
Well, they can still practice yoga. And what I would recommend is that you make a commitment for a period of time, then learn a few things that are 10, 15 minutes long, and you can do 10, 15 minutes a day on your own, and then you can come into class when you can come into class. This is one of the best parts of yoga. If you're very busy and you say, I haven't got time for this, well, in one class, you're not only going to work your body and improve your health, you're going to quiet the mind, you're going to look deeply inside yourself, and usually connect to something very deep and profound. I mean, one class. You're not going to get that in a TV show, no matter how good the TV show is. You're not going to get that in an hour of really anything else, except for maybe being with a loved one or being out in nature. But you might still not get that physical aspect. So you get a lot in a short amount of time, and we all like efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite classes are the restorative yoga classes, where they're really gentle and not really strenuous. But you can, especially for beginners, it's so much easier to then start to connect in and focus on your breath. Sometimes some of the poses at the beginning are so hard. It's like, focus on my breath. I'm dying over here. I can't even think clearly. So I find that those can be really nice, wet, gentle way. Whether you're an expert or a beginner, those are some of my favorites.
But for me, I found that there is a point for me. I'm in about the first 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm doing a little bit of that. This is, I'm just kind of aching and stretching and wondering what I'm doing here, but then all of a sudden something happens and I just kind of plop into what's going on, and by the end of that class, it just feels great.
Mm-hmm.
Feels great.
Well, we want to make sure we have enough time for you to give your contact information. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you. It has been such a pleasure. This has been a great conversation. And the website is www.saraswatiriveryoga.com.
Karen, thank you again.
Thank you both.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Karen's website can also be found at, we have a link up there at healthfullivingsf.com at the KPU page there, as well as archive shows and some shows that are coming up soon as well.
Yes, go to HealthfulLivingSF.com. That's HEALTHFUL LIVINGSF, as in San Francisco, .com. If you click on the little icon of me on the talking on the radio, you'll get to all of our reality sandwich information with all of that information that Martin was talking about. And to sign off today, I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. You've been listening to Healthful Living's radio show Reality Sandwich, and we're here every day at noon. I'm sorry, every Thursday at noon.
Every Thursday at noon. I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist, healthful living advocate, and co-host of Reality Sandwich here with my wife, Julie. Every Thursday at noon, 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening.